Welcome to Main Street Banking, a podcast for community bankers brought to you by the Barrett School of Banking, located in the heart of banking, blues, and barbecue, Memphis, Tennessee. My name is Byron Earnhardt. I am the program director here at Barrett, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to our corner of the banking world and hope that we can make your bank, your staff, and maybe even your day a better one. Recently, in our overview of the FDIC and the OCC's annual report, I noticed a topic that kept coming up frequently, and that was the current expected credit losses, or CECL. And that's the new standard for determining exposure to credit risk. And the more I dug into it, the more I realized four things. The first, this could dramatically impact community banks' earnings. Number two, the old way of doing things was going out the door and it's drastically changing. The third was that there's been very little preparation and discussion on this in the community banking world. And the fourth one was I needed somebody to tell me more about the topic. And fortunately, I found somebody from Moody's Analytics. We've got Robbie Holditch here with us today and to discuss CECL and how this is going to impact community banking. So Robbie, welcome to the show. And thank you for being willing to meet with us on this. Tell us a little bit about yourself and Moody's Analytics.
Sure. Thank you, Byron. And thank you to the Barrett School of Banking for attempting to understand for community banks what CECL is. So just off the top, my name is Robbie Holditch. I'm with Moody's Analytics. I am a director in the Risk and Accounting Advisory Group. What we specialize in, so my background, I started my career with KPMG, where I spent 8 years before I found my way into the small community bank space through private equity after the Great Recession. Joined a bank that was about $1.5 billion, and we grew that bank to about $6 billion, where I was the SEC Director of Reporting, Regulatory Reporting, reviewer of the allowance under its current method. And 15 months ago, joined Moody's Analytics to help keep our rich credit research and our credit people and our economists and our modelers between the guardrails of this new CECL standard. We do have a little solution that helps combat CECL. It's called Impairment Studio, and that's the only plug I'll
that's fine.
Analytics there. But back to your question, why to join Moody's is to help keep the credit researchers, the economists, and the modelers between the guardrails of CECL, using my accounting background and my knowledge in the community banking space.
Good deal. Well, on that note, can you tell us what CECL is and how it differs from what community banks are currently doing?
Sure, absolutely. So what is CECL? CECL stands for the Current Expected Credit Loss, and it was produced by the Financial Accounting Standards Board, better known as FASB, in 2016. And what it is, there are three requirements under CECL, and that is taking a historical measure to your portfolio, and the assets under scope of CECL are have increased, right? So it's not just loans held for investment; it's debt securities that are usually under HTM or available for sale debt securities. And what it does is it has three requirements. It takes a historical measure into account. It must take a current conditions, like your lending in current conditions, and a reasonable and supportable forecast. And that reasonable and supportable forecast is mentioned about 39 times in the 291-page standard and never once defined. So, Byron, you and I were talking earlier about what really is a forecast. Well, it's a projection of future events. So it's what the standard requires you to do is look out over the life of those financial assets and begin to predict and forecast the losses that will be there on those particular assets under scope. How it differs today, and I'll cover that.
No worries.
How it differs today is the allowance process at most financial institutions is purely on a historical-based measure. And the small institutions that I usually work with and have worked with in the past, that allowance process is driven particularly close to the collateral value on each of the assets, right? So they look at their exposure on the collateral above the loans, above the collateral values, above the collateral value. And if the loan has an exposure there, that's where they start their historical measure of loss for those particular assets.
So is it fair to say that, and I'm sure we'll dig into this a lot deeper, but how community banks calculate that the formula is changing, is that?
That's right. That's right. And like I mentioned, there are three requirements. That's the historical starting point. So if you're using your internal historical charge-off measures now, you can absolutely start there with CECL as your historical starting point. And adding to that any current conditions that you're lending in. So if your portfolio is changing, if you're measuring different risk across new assets, and then looking out over the life of those assets, so looking to the maturity date and forecasting the losses that will likely be there on those particular assets is how it, really that the standard is changing how we're doing it today is really just layering on that forecasted view of the portfolio.
Mm. Well, when are most small financial institutions required to comply with this?
Good question. So FASB broke it into three different parts, and the SEC or public business entities that file their reports, their 10-Ks and 10-Qs with the SEC are required to comply starting 1/1 of 2020. There are two other areas. Most of my community banks are going to fall in the 1/1/2022. If you are a PBE that is a non-SEC filer, there's a requirement there for you to start in 1/1 of 2021. So to answer your question directly and I think your audience that you mentioned that you enjoy this podcast, most of them are going to be your small financial institutions that are not publicly traded or are not public business entities. And that deadline, again, is 1/1 of 2022.
Okay. Is the government going to they do this sometimes, but is the government going to cancel or defer that standard, or what are they saying?
Another good question. That's likely, probably, I would think all the meetings I've been on in the community bank space, that is the number one question that I usually hear, and it's one that's it's a misnomer because the government, the regulators, are not the groups that established this. This is not a regulatory, this is not an FDIC or an OCC regulation. This is coming from, again, the FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board. And there has, there's been talk about deferring it, but I don't foresee the FASB canceling this particular accounting standard.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting in our overview was that this isn't a stark regulation coming down from a regulator or the group of regulators. It's coming down from FASB. It's a little bit different animal than I think what we're used to seeing in the community banking world.
Yep. So it is important to point out that the regulators have come out with measures to help small banks, community banks, and financial institutions, credit unions, hopefully deal with this. And this is they phased in. So your day one impact when you are compliant with CECL is a direct hit to retained earnings. The regulators have come out and allowed for adjustment in that day one hit. So the delta between where you are reserving now and your CECL number, that delta, the regulators have actually finalized a rule that says you can bring that delta in over a 3-year period.
Okay.
And that was just released at the end of 2018. So you can find that on the FDIC's website, OCC's website, and it's readily available for all to read.
Okay. Are financial institutions below $1 billion in assets going to be really, really required to comply with CECL, or is there going to be some differences between what is expected for those smaller institutions?
Yeah, great question. So recently, the United States House had hearings on this particular issue, mm-hmm. if they were going to somehow allow smaller financial institutions to either not comply with CECL or just defer it. And it didn't gain much traction. But back to it's not a regulatory thing. It's a Financial Accounting Standards Board issued rule where if you comply with generally accepted accounting principles and you have an audited financial statement at the end of the year, the answer is yes, even though your assets are below $1 billion or so, yes, you've got to comply with the CECL standard.
What are the regulators saying? What are you hearing? What are their opinions of this? Do they agree with this? Have they started questioning community bank CECL readiness?
Yep. So, as I mentioned, the House held hearings a short time ago, and our own we had representatives at the House hearing, and it was really focused on the smaller banks because, as I mentioned, the larger banks that have to issue financial statements to the SEC, we even started seeing estimates, first round CECL estimates for your big institutions, right. JP Morgan's and Citi's. And it's my belief, going back to your directly to your question, when the regulators and when external auditors start seeing these estimates produced by the large institutions, I think it's going to pick up the conversation and force them to start asking the smaller institutions direct questions about their CECL, you know, where they are in the process. Have you started? Have you thought about your methodology requirements? Have you thought about your segmentation requirements? And ultimately, have you thought about how that CECL estimate is going to change your balance sheet and your capital, right? So I do believe that they've been talking about pushing it off. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do believe that because your larger institutions are starting to file their CECL estimates, it's going to force conversations downstream.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like from our conversation earlier, when the larger banks start putting these numbers and start getting their numbers out, it starts putting the loss rates, you know, starts defining those a little bit more and starts, yeah, you know, drilling down to at least the ballpark of what the individual like an auto loan, like homes, stuff
sure,
like that.
Absolutely. So the and all this is public information, but I guess I'm a really big geek. I actually read the 10-Ks when they produced the estimates. But J.P. Morgan's CECL estimate, they prescribed that it is going to increase their reserves up to and around 35%, and that's just in a baseline case. So if you can take that measurement and then apply that to your own portfolio, it will likely give you a shock and awe of, this is the impact to my balance sheet and my capital at day one. Let's start moving in a CECL conversation. Let's get the conversation started and start thinking about ways to combat and accomplish a smooth CECL estimate.
That's a number. That's, yeah, a serious number. How that brought about why I wanted to have this episode was I could foresee that's a number. That's, yeah, serious. How would most smaller financial institutions who don't have the adequate historical information, how are they even getting this process of getting ready for CECL?
Yep. So I've had several meetings over the past 15 months with smaller financial institutions that don't have historical data for whatever reason. Their internal core systems just don't capture that historical data, and they're required to keep it somehow on internal servers in Excel. And so as you can see, it's a very manual process. Mm-hmm. Information can be lost. Information oftentimes is not at the loan level. It's aggregated. So to combat that, the answer to accomplish the first requirement of CECL, to come up with a historical measure, there are several ways. One, you can go to publicly available data, such as, you know, the FDIC, the call reports, right? And you can take a look at your peers and your own historical measures. But again, that's at that aggregated call report level. And there are other methods. You could commercially buy historical data. Moody's Analytics has data going back 35 years on each asset class that a financial institution would have on their balance sheet. Mm-hmm. So information is available. There are ways to get information. I think the better message, rather than do you have it, is let's get started to see where you are today. Let's understand what data you do and do not have. That way it starts your CECL process. So when those questions do start coming from the regulators and your auditors, you can answer the question that, yes, we've started, we've thought about it, and we're working through our process today.
Yeah, and that's another thing with it. When, you know, I get that there's a 2020, for a lot of our audience, there's a 2021 and a 2022 implementation.
Right.
But you're talking about historical data in 2021 and 2022. Well, what's historical data? 2019, 2020, 2018, and so forth. And that means now's the time to start building that number. You don't want to get blindsided in 21 and 22.
That's,
and
right,
that's what brought this up for me.
And it may be even important to look back further than the 2019s, 2018s, back through a credit cycle, so you can begin to understand maybe how your portfolio would react in certain circumstances and in different different environments.
Right. What is Moody's Analytics seeing in the industry with regards to smaller institutions and their timelines? Are we even being proactive in this? I mean, from my standpoint, it seems like a lot of the smaller community banks are seem to be, I guess, delaying their implementation of CECL. What's Moody's Analytics seeing out there in the market?
Yeah, so your intuition and your ear to the ground are proven true. We held a CECL forum, mini CECL forum in Chicago on January 24th, where 15 financial institutions joined us to understand CECL, and they ranged in asset sizes from the 115 million. I think the largest was 2.2 billion. So it gives you a good range of who was attending the CECL forum. And we took a straw poll of where everyone was in the room on their CECL compliance. And over 50% had not started the CECL conversation. And the other piece of that 50% had started educating themselves on the CECL standard and really were they going to be able to skirt around it or did they have to comply with it? And of course, the answer is yes. But as you'll see in the ratio, that over 50% had not started and are just starting the conversation. So we find in the meetings I've been in and with my colleagues that the smaller institutions are kind of dragging their feet with CECL, especially when we start, we started seeing these CECL estimates, very, very significant CECL estimates and on your larger institutions. It's going to force a conversation. So I guess my advisement and wish for the smaller institutions is to start the conversations today and really begin to understand where you are in your CECL process. Like you said, it's a 2022 deadline for most of the smaller institutions. But that, I mean, we're already midpoint through 2019, and that's a very short time frame. To get a grasp on what data you do have today, and then being able to forecast that over the life of those assets. So that would be my advice. Just advice would be to just let's get started on the CECL conversation. That would be my strongest advisement point.
Yeah, and that's another number, 50%.
Yeah.
And we were talking earlier about the number of community banks. Start extrapolating that number. Start extrapolating what the hit potentially could be there in terms of capital allowances for credit loss. You've got a significant, in my opinion, you've got a significant number and you've got a significant issue that, quite frankly, is not being addressed.
That's right. And it is, like as we mentioned earlier, as you just said, it's very important to note that at day one, that day one transition to mm-hmm. the CECL standard is not an expense. So it's not going to hit your P&L, but it's a direct impact to your capital, your retained earnings.
Right.
So not until the second quarter when you're required to comply will it be an expense or right. income type of thing.
Right. So just don't get blindsided.
Exactly right.
Start preparation today. Start today, start early, start often.
That's right. It.
So, Rob, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this. I feel like I learned a lot. We're going to have some more information, some of the Moody's Analytics information on our show page at Barrett.ws. Any more further information you all would have, we'll have it there and contact them as well. So, Robbie, I appreciate your time today. Thanks for swinging by the office, man. Appreciate
it. Thank you to the Barrett School of Banking.
Well, that's our episode for today. We hope you've enjoyed yourself and learned a little something. If you haven't already, please feel free to subscribe to our podcast and drop us a 5-star rating. You can follow us at Barrett Banking on Twitter or Barrett School of Banking on Facebook and LinkedIn. And we even have a new Community Banking Road Trip playlist on Spotify highlighting your favorite songs about your home state. Check that out and feel free to submit your favorite song about your state to add to the playlist. We have an ever-growing slate of classes, seminars, and webinars that are available, and not to mention our industry-recognized Graduate School of Banking every May, and we look forward to seeing you at any or all of our events. For more information, check out our website at Barrett.ws. And from Memphis, the heart of banking, blues, and barbecue, we'll see y'all next time on Main Street Banking.